Hello, this is Ruthann Brodsky, and welcome to the webcast. It's afternoon. It's a gorgeous afternoon in Michigan. It's close to 80 degrees. It is 4 o'clock Eastern Time, 1 o'clock Pacific Time, and my day has been an up-and-down day. I've had a great deal of stress and a great deal of relaxation, so I've had a combination of the two, and I hate to say it, but most of the day has been in a stressful situation, not so much relaxing. But right now I feel very relaxed, which is nice to know. And I am hoping that the teleseminars, that these recordings have been helpful for you, and that you have figured out that you are indeed the captain of your ship, that just, you know, wanting to be relaxed doesn't help make it so, that it may be a combination of things for you that will help you relax. For most people, relaxing is not just sitting down and watching TV or being a couch potato, but relaxing is doing away with the stressful situations, changing the environment, and yet being able to take some action without being stressed. So I hope these teleseminars have been helpful for you and given you some ideas on how you can achieve that. Everyone reacts to stress very differently. The styles are just different. Some people are naturally laid back. Other people react very strongly at the slightest hint of stress. And most of us fall somewhere between those two extremes. There may be genetic variations that may explain part of the differences. And the genes that actually control the stress might keep people on a fairly even keel, you know, only occasionally preparing the body to fight or to flee. Overactive or underactive stress may stem from slightly differences in genes. I'm not really sure, but it's always possible. Life experiences also very much contribute to how sensitive you are to stress. Strong stress reactions sometimes can be traced to early environmental factors. People who were exposed to extreme stress as children tend to be particularly vulnerable to stress as adults. You know, stress develops when the demands in life exceed your ability to cope with them. It follows then that you can manage stress by changing your environment so that the demands aren't quite so high. You can also control by learning how to better cope with the demands in your environment, and then, of course, by doing both. You know, how do you do that? Well, two basic things. You look after your body. We've been talking about that. It requires a healthy diet, requires exercise, adequate rest, and then you learn different techniques to relax. Deep breathing exercises, inhaling through your nose, exhaling through your mouth. It might be taking Tai Chi, meditating, learning how to calm your anxieties. But the more important thing is that also to shift your outlook. How do you look at life? Is your glass half full? Is your glass half empty? Choosing to look at situations in a more positive way can reduce your stress. I mean, it can't be as simple as that. So when you're in a stressful situation or a conflict or you're worrying and you're tied up in knots, ask what part of it is troubling you most. You know, are you afraid of failing? Are you afraid of losing faith? If so, would that really be bad? Are you angry or frustrated to the point of losing self-control? If so, is your reaction out of proportion? You know, take a break, talk to yourself. One of these statements I usually make to myself is, and this has nothing to do with anything, is, in 100 years, will it really matter? In 100 years, who's going to know about this? So if you are stressful about something that will matter in 100 years, then you probably need some help to take care of it. But if you are stressful about something that isn't going to make a great deal of matter in 100 years, maybe not even 1 year, maybe this, whatever it is that's bothering you, you may be overreacting to it. You know, stress management requires practice. It just doesn't come because you want it to. Like your golf swing, just because you can visualize it and you see the men and women on TV swinging and it looks so easy, that doesn't mean you're going to be able to hit a fairway wood off the ground on a downhill lie. You have to practice that. You have to deal with change, and you have to deal with things that come unexpectedly. You know, even if you take your frustrations in stride, your stress response can still surge up when you find yourself especially dealing with something big, such as an illness or a job, a loss of job, or somebody passes away. So your flight and fight response have biological roots. You don't have control. It's a question of self-preservation. That's how the body sees it. So if stress is getting the better of you and you can, and you're fearing its long-term effects, then it's probably time that you get help. There are different kinds of stress. Just as stress doesn't, there's no one stress for everybody. Everybody has different kinds of stress. Stress can be complicated. It can be confusing, mostly because there are different kinds of stress. There's acute stress, episodic stress, and chronic stress. And each has its own characteristics and its own symptoms and its own duration and its own treatments. All right, let's look at one of these acute stress. Acute stress is the most common form of stress. It comes from demands and pressures of the recent past and anticipated demands and pressures of the near future. Acute stress, it can be very thrilling, it can be exciting in small doses, but too much acute stress is exhausting. For example, acute stress might be skiing down a slippery slope, or in the summer, too much swimming and you're surfing and you're taking in too much water and you become hyper because you can hardly breathe. You're suffocating with the water. Fortunately, acute stress are recognized by most of us. It's really, we go through a laundry list of what has gone wrong in our lives. The auto accident that crumpled the car fender. The loss of an important contract. A deadline that we're rushing to meet, and one of our kids is having problems at home, at school rather. Because it's short-term, acute stress really doesn't have time to do the extensive damage associated with long-term stress. And the most common symptoms of acute stress are some combination of anger or irritability, depression. And you have different levels of emotions. You may have muscle problems, including tension headaches. You could have back pain, jaw pain. And again, you may have muscles, ligament, and tendon pain. People who are stressed often have problems with their stomach. We know that. They may have heartburn. Acid reflux, diarrhea, constipation, and irritable bowel system. Apparently what we do affects our gut, and our gut is very sensitive to how we are doing for that day. It's very common for people with acute stress to be over-aroused, irritable, and tense. They talk about themselves as having a lot of nervous energy. Actually, what it is, they are just usually very stressful people. The problem with acute stress is that it's strength, but it's short, and most of us recognize it. Other of us do not recognize it, and we tend to think it's just part of life, as, for example, being on a deadline or going on that on the slope and skiing that we shouldn't be going on. We thrive, or we clamor for that extra special adrenaline lift that's coming our way when we're under a great deal of stress. Another kind of stress is episodic acute stress. And actually, this is less suffering, but usually it happens to people whose lives are so disordered that they are in chaos. And they're always in a rush, but they're always late. If something can go wrong, it usually does. They usually take on way too many things to do. They have too many irons in the fire, and they can't organize all the things that they're doing. And they seem to be in a perpetual attitude of acute stress. And it's common for those people to be over-aroused, short-tempered, irritable, and anxious. Nothing wrong with that. Then we have go into another kind of stress, and that would be, well, let me talk a little bit more about the chronic acute stress, because that deals with personalities that we, most of us, label as type A personalities. That's what the cardiologists label them. They have a excessive competitive drive, they're aggressive, they're impatient, and there's always this sense of urgency about them. Another form of acute episodic stress are for people who are always worrying about something. Every time you talk to them, there's some kind of disaster has taken place, and it's right in the middle of their lives. Again, the symptoms of this kind of acute stress are persistent tension, headaches, migraines, hypertension, chest pain, and on and on. Then the third and major category of stress is what we call chronic stress. And chronic stress is not quite as thrilling as acute stress. It's the kind of grinding stress that wears people away day after day after day. It really does destroy bodies and minds. It wreaks havoc on long-term attrition. It's the stress of poverty. It usually hits people who are much poorer. And it's called the stress of dysfunctional families. Chronic stress takes place when a person never sees a way out of some kind of miserable situation. There's unrelenting demands and nervousness for each person. And this can be very traumatizing. It could be that chronic stress may arise because as a child you were under stress a great deal, and it was traumatized because your parents may not have been home. They might have been both working. But the worst aspect of chronic stress is that people get used to it. They forget it's there. And they're aware of acute stress because it's new, but they're not aware of chronic stress. Chronic stress really does kill. It kills through violence, it kills through suicide, it kills through stroke, and maybe even cancer. People just seem to wear down and wear out, burn out with chronic stress, because your physical and mental resources are depleted, and there's not much help you can give. Okay. Just to veer off this just a little bit, I wanted to talk about women and stress, because women seem to position themselves to be in more stress and more frequently than men. It seems they are always multitasking. And it seems as if they try to do it all, to be the mother, to be the cleaner-upper after there are activities from the rest of the family. Also, the woman of the house usually is working, so she has her day job. Her night job is the home and the children. And there just are so many tasks that it's easy to become a dysfunctional female, particularly while you're raising a family. This only can lead to a great deal of stress in that family. And the sad part is that working mothers feel they have very little control about why they feel stressed. Let's see. The three kinds of stress are important because I wanted you to recognize them, because actually your health may depend on it. Sometimes it's hard to recognize when you're in chronic stress. And if you realize that your health does depend on how you treat, how you deal, how you handle stress, then you probably would be able to recognize it much better. When women are stressed, I think I mentioned this in my last teleseminar, they often turn to their family and friends for emotional support. They become nurturers. Instead of using the model of fighting the prey, the two daughters two of your daughters may take up and be the nurturing and replacing the mother and father. The other area is that women can either stay and deal with their stress, or they can run away from it. Running away doesn't work most of the time because it always comes back and hits you in the head. The body still knows that you're under stress. You're not kidding the body. And whether it's burnout from your job or stress from your job, the body will figure it out and plan accordingly. Some people are more productive when they're stressed. Other people are less productive when they're stressed. When I talk about dealing with stress and how important it is to your health, one of the basics that I'm talking about is your immune system and your brain. All right, before I get into that, let me just refresh the program to see if there are any more questions. Okay. Very good. No questions there. All right. Well, let's talk about stress in your brain. When you have an infection or something that causes inflammation, such as a burn or an injury, many different kinds of cells from the immune system stream down to that site to protect it, to repair that site. Some of these cells are like garbage collectors. Some of the cells make antibodies. And some of the cells are just general cells. The way they tackle the problem of inflammation and the way that they handle the treatment for inflammation will either make the original site for the brain even more inflamed or will do away with the inflammation altogether. The brain is signaled by molecules, and the brain is signaled to change its function, and they can have a whole new set of functions. And many of the homes do have that. Many homes have that. When there's a fire, for example, the alarm goes off in a different mode other than if there were a burglar, there's a different mode. Well, your brain recognizes the different kinds of stress also, and it functions accordingly. But all the responses come from the cells and signaling the molecules in the brain that something has to be done. Now, if there's lots of inflammation in the brain doesn't work as well as it should. So if you're chronically stressed, the part of the brain that controls the stress response is going to be continually pumping out a lot of the stress hormones. This doesn't work very well in your home or in the homes, may not work very well in your home or in your home, the brain, or it may not in your immune system, and it may not work very well in other people's immune systems either. The immune cells are actually bathed in molecules which are constantly telling them, essentially telling them to stop fighting. And so in situations of chronic stress, your immune cells are less able to respond to an invader like a bacteria or a virus. They are so busy dealing with the stress and the invading molecules of stress that they can't deal with, let's say that someone sneezes in your face and you might catch a cold or a virus of some sort. The same can be said that some stress is good. You know, it's not all bad. While some stress is good, too much stress is not good. If you're too stressed, your performance falls off. The objectivity should be not to get rid of the stress completely, because you can't get rid of stress. Stress is life. Life is stress. Rather, you need to be able to use your stress optimally. The key to dealing with optimal stress, you know, what's good for you might not be work for somebody else, however, is to understand what your optimal peak is. You know, how much stress can you take? How much stress does it take for you to change your behavior? You know, how much stress does it take for you to make a dinner, or for you to change the dinner, the menu in the dinner? You know, what are the things that cause you a great deal of stress? So let's go back again to controlling the immune response, because when you're very stressed, the immune response sort of digs a hole and doesn't want to participate. There's a problem between the brain and the immune response. You know, neither of them want to go away. So there has to be an exit battle barrier for these battles somewhere in the road. And the way that this handles, because if your brain can't make enough of these hormones to turn the immune system off, when it doesn't have to be active anymore, then it's going to go unchecked and result in autoimmune disease. All right, let me go through that again. Your brain sends signals to the molecules, which in turn sends signals to the cells, to give you a program where you don't want to be over responsive to change, or where you don't want to be over responsive to the point that your immune system will no longer function for you. And if there's too much stress and there's too many autoresponders that are working in the mix, the disease that you're facing may turn into an autoimmune disease and attack your own body. That could be like arthritis, or it could be also carpal tunnel, or it could be lupus, or it could be some kind of inflammation. Okay. Now, there's lots of factors involved in the autoimmune system, and there's many effects that it has in the brain and its nervous system. And it all depends on the nerve chemicals that are also in the brain. But your goal should be to try to learn to control your stress to make it work for you. Just don't think of getting rid of the stress. Think of turning it to your best advantage. You know, they still don't know why sometimes that the immune system and the brain don't agree, and they're on different paths, and nobody's really sure what each of them will come back with. But the brain is very critical, and it doesn't perform as well when you're under stress. You know, the word in sports, the word choking, when someone misses a 2-foot putt because they were stressed out, their nerves and they're anxious, that is high degree of stress. Your brain doesn't function, and if your brain's not functioning, your body's not going to function as well as it should either. Hold on 1 minute. So there are techniques that golfers learn, that baseball players learn, that football players learn, basketball, to make the free the free throw, you know, they undergo, they go coaching, they have psychologists that work with them to eliminate their stress so they can use their natural talent. So the most productive way to think about stress is in terms of control. Because you can't eliminate stress from your life. How can you tell what's the optimal stress for you? Well, there's no single threshold that's optimal for all people. Everybody is different. We all have unique requirements. The gentleman next door to me loves to argue. I would get so stressed if I had to argue like that all the time. Because he's also a litigator, an attorney, so he made arguing his profession. He is in heaven. I would find it very, very uncomfortable. We all need to know, then, how to become aware of our stressors, both emotional stressors and physical stressors. You know, recognize what we can change. Can you change your stressors by avoiding or eliminating them completely? Can you shorten your stressor, your exposure to stress? You know, take a break, maybe. Can you reduce the intensity of your emotional reaction to stress? Are you performing to please everyone? Are you overreacting and looking at something very critical and that it's very urgent and it may not be so? You know, try to temper your excess emotions. It's also helpful if you learn to moderate your physical responses to stress. You know, medications that a physician can prescribe for you can be helpful in the short run, but you really, again, I get back to, are the captain of your ship, and you have to learn how to moderate and control your stress so that you have some emotional reserves. My recommendation for most people is when they're stressful is exercise, if it's at all possible. And it usually is possible to at least some degree. Now, why does exercise work? Well, the experts agree that exercise is one of the best remedies for stress, because when you exercise, you produce these lovely little substances called endorphins. And endorphins are formed within the body, and they naturally relieve pain, and they keep you feeling of well-being and relaxation. They almost have a similar structure to morphine. You can also release endorphins when you have when you're in a relaxed state. If you're taking a good run or after a good yoga class and you're feeling very good about yourself, your endorphins, you've been releasing endorphins. If you're on medication, you really should check with your doctor before you start an exercise program, whether it be yoga or Pilates or running or working out. But it's never too late to actually start exercising, regardless of your age. And if you say you're too stressed, you don't have enough time to start an exercise program, then obviously you need to look at yourself and why are you in that situation and how stressful you must be that you can't set aside 20 minutes, 30 minutes a day for some exercise. I hope these ideas have been helpful for you. I welcome your ideas. This recording will be available for replay about 20 seconds after the recording. You are welcome to share it with other people. And our next session is this Friday at 2 p.m. when we will talk a little bit more about